welcome to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I did, I almost blanked out again. It's just not good. I'm your host.
Too many shows.
I do. I think I still remember. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptoff. C70 at the bat. At C70 with me, as always, Tara Wellman. Tara Wellman won on... No, just Tara Wellman. Do we need to start this over? Tara Wellman on Twitter. Bird Seeds on the YouTubes. Thankfully, the Cardinals are playing better than I am doing hosting of this show. Somehow, and again, you've listened to us. You know we don't have a clue about why this has happened because we've written the Cardinals off at least six times, I think, this season. But the Cardinals sit tied with the Brewers for second place, two games behind the Cubs. They sit tied with the Brewers, three games behind the Colorado Rockies because the Los Angeles Dodgers hate us and never want to have good things to happen in St. Louis. Tara, I know that the Cardinals are playing a softer schedule now, but we've also seen that that hasn't mattered all year long. And yet, finally, something has clicked. Something is put together. And they are, you know, I know they're getting some help from Milwaukee sweeping the Cubs, and they're getting some help here and there, but they're winning games that I'm not sure they would have won even a month ago. I mean, is there anything we can put our finger on that really seems to make the difference?
I keep going back to, Dan McLaughlin keeps saying it on the Fox Sports Midwest broadcast, but he just keeps saying, how has this happened? And I feel the same way. How has this happened? In some cases, I think we've sort of joked about the fact that the Memphis Redbirds are now playing as a major league team. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's something to that. Maybe the youth movement has sparked some energy, or even just brought some of that winning culture with it, which sounds so strange to bring the winning culture from a minor league team to the big league club. But I don't know. Maybe some of that energy is contagious, and some of that success those guys have had, they play like they're not afraid of playing at the big league level. And that's, I think that's been extraordinarily valuable to the next man up sort of mentality, because, as you might've noticed, the Cardinals have, I think it's, 47 outfielders.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I think that's the total now. But it doesn't feel like they have 47 outfielders because they just keep rotating in and out of the active lineup, if you will, based on who's hurt or who's sick or who's whatever has whatever going on. And they all just keep coming in and contributing. I think even Stephen Piscotty has looked better as of late. So I don't know how this has happened other than to say that, to their credit, these players haven't backed off. They haven't really let themselves kind of give up on this season, and crazy things happen in this game, man, and who knows, maybe this is one of them. Maybe this is just another little blip on the radar that'll be gone 7 days from now, but you know, I'll give them credit where it's due, and this week they've shown a little bit of life.
You know, if you want to look at narrative, whether it's accurate or not, this most recent run really comes on the heels of the Mike Leake trade. You know, I don't know if that is because you're not running Mike Leake out there every 5 days. And so Jack Flaherty has pitched better, perhaps better than Leake would have, although Leake has pitched pretty well for Seattle, last I looked. I don't know if that was that, you know, legendary kick in the pants that we thought that this team was going to need all year long from a trade or something. You know, that shakeup of roster mentality that we've been talking about since, you know, June. And I don't know. I mean, it may be the fact that, you know, Adam Wainwright's been hurt too. And so you have five starters right now that, even with Jack Flaherty's inexperience, it doesn't feel like Luke Weaver has any experience, but he hasn't pitched like it. Even with that, all those five guys running out there, you feel like every day you have a fairly solid chance of winning the ball game, because it feels like everybody's going to turn in a quality start. We haven't seen the Cardinals give up, I don't think they haven't given up five runs as a team since the second game against the Giants, where they won 11-6. Some of that was a little bit late. They're keeping the runs low, and this offense is doing enough for the most part to win those games. I don't know if this is too little too late. I don't know if it should have been done earlier, but whatever the case, it's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think we've seen in the past where a trade that was maybe unexpected, or even if it was expected, was a bit dramatic in the way that it created sort of a ripple effect throughout the rest of the clubhouse. That sort of thing can make a difference. Now, I think similar to, I don't know, trying to credit the team meeting earlier in the season, there's a limit to how effective something like that can be and the real impact that it can have on everyday results. But, maybe there's a correlation there between just sort of making everyone, reminding everyone that things can change in one phone call. And I don't know, I guess there's been a little bit of a lingering conversation about how that trade went down and how people reacted to it. But I think every one of them would tell you they're happy with the results of the games they've played in the last week or so. And at the end of the day, I think they're all more concerned about that than just about anything else.
You know, we always use the touchstones of 06 and 11 for teams. And, you know, we have talked all year, this team does not fit either one of those stereotypes. I mean, 06 was a better team than the final record gives it credit for. They had a rough September, but, you know, they spent a lot of time 10 games over or whatever. 2011, just that miracle run that you just really won't ever see again. I mean, they're just never going to, that's once in a lifetime type stuff. But if this team makes it into the playoffs, I feel like it's going to be a more reasonable comparison for future years than anything else. Because this team has sat around, you know, under 500 for so long, but they've been able to put it together late. And they've gotten some help. It's been nice. I mean, if the Cubs were the Cubs from last year, we would not be having this conversation at all. But they've been able to hang around and do just enough. And now they're coming into the last, you know, 3 weeks of the season and a significantly good chance of making the playoffs. So that's not great. I think, you know, we're looking at Fangraph's playoff odds right now, and the Cardinals have a 23.7% chance of making the playoffs, either by the winning the division or winning the wild card. You know, it's 1-4, basically, which is a lot better than, you know, 1-10 or whatever it was last...
3 days ago?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, and that, you know, could get even better tomorrow when they don't even play. So, you know, it's possible. But I do think this is a chance to be a team... It's not a great team, obviously. It's not, you can argue if it's a good team. Right now they're playing like a good team. But I think it's going to be that team that, if they get in the playoffs, it's going to be that team that everybody looks back at in 4 or 5 years when a team is struggling in June and say, look at that, you know, 2017 team. You know, they were terrible now and they wound up, you know, making it in. It may become harder for the Cardinals to be written off by the fans. We'll still do it, but it may be a little bit harder to do in the future after seeing a team like this if they're able to creep in.
I think it'll be very interesting to see how they, if they do get into the playoffs, how that happens. And I don't necessarily mean comprehending it on a a conceptual level, but you know, whether it is the starting pitching that really became the backbone of this team, or if it's the offense that came around and you saw guys who had struggled maybe return more to career norms, or if it's a matter of Matt Carpenter getting healthy and Dexter Fowler being healthy and Tommy Pham being able to actually see the baseball. You know, if it's more along the lines of those sorts of things, because, you know, in both of those years, whether it's 2011 or 2006, there were extenuating circumstances to both of those seasons that made it more of an uphill battle. In 2006, guys got healthy. In 2011, David Freese turned into a monster. You know, it's just, I think it'll be interesting to see what that story becomes when this season it has been such a struggle in every facet of the game. I mean, the year started with the most horrific defense I think that we've ever seen from a Cardinals team, at least in recent memory. And the starting pitching was good. For a while, the bullpen really solidified, and then all of a sudden, it fell apart again. Then you had the pitching, where you had Mike Leake, who was struggling, and Adam Wainwright, who was injured, and Lance Lynn had a couple little rough starts in the middle, and of course, you know, we all know that Carlos Martinez is just, is just such a head case. Please note the intense sarcasm for the record.
Yeah, better mark that down to be safe.
Be clarify, that was pure sarcasm, because I think Carlos Martinez has been very good this year, despite the frustrating starts he's had at times. But the point is, every facet of the game has been a struggle for this team at some point over the course of the season, if not throughout the entirety of the season. And, you know, then there have been the individual struggles of Colton Wong coming out of spring training, and then Matt Carpenter, who suddenly became enemy number one after not having the kind of start to the year that everyone expected and hoped of him. And then the struggle and the roller coaster that is Adam Wainwright's career right now, and what that becomes for the 2017 season. So, yeah, I mean, if you think about what this year could become and how it could be looked back on, I would be very curious to see what it is that pushes this team to the postseason, because so many things have gone so terribly wrong that we keep asking, how has this happened?
As you said, it feels like maybe all it is all these parts are working together for the first time all year. And one of those parts got an upgrade this week in Juan Nicasio, who, if anybody has listened to either one of the bonus Meet Me at Mutuals or the regular Meet Me at Mutual, the fact that I can actually say the name now means that I've done a pretty good job this weekend of practicing. Nicasio, you know, again, was a Pirate. The Pirates put him on waivers. Philadelphia took him and then flipped him to the Cardinals for a fairly decent prospect. He's not eligible for the postseason, but he's already, I mean, he's stepped into the closer role. And then I guess that tells you just exactly what this bullpen looked like when a guy that, you know, was on waivers and has been on now his third team this year immediately is your closer. But it also, I think it solidifies what the team has needed. I mean, you've got Tyler Lyons now for the ninth or the eighth. You've got guys you can pick and choose. You've got enough arms out there. You don't have to use Sung Wan Oh, unless the game is way out of hand. And I think there's enough
aging people. Mike Matheny.
Yeah, hopefully he can keep an eye on that.
When Mo listens to this show in the morning, he can pass that note along.
Yeah, Mo doesn't like to send notes, is what he told us at the blogger day.
So right.
That could be part of the problem, is where our information is not getting through. It's just interesting to see how one person at the end of the, and we've talked about it, you know, because when Trevor Rosenthal was going, the bullpen worked a lot better than when he wasn't. But it's interesting to see this kind of click. And part of it's, you know, they don't need as many earnings with the starting rotation going as well as it did, like Michael Walker today. But having that, you know, reasonable presence at the end of the game is going to make people feel a lot better.
I think it just reiterates how important that inning is, whether it's the ninth or the when the game's on the line with one out in the eighth and you bring the closer in there. I think you're right. We saw it with Trevor Rosenthal, and when he got clicking and they moved him into that closer control, all of a sudden things started to shape up in the bullpen, and all of a sudden you started to see some order and not so much chaos, and you started to see guys settle into roles a little bit, and then Mike Matheny was able to mix and match outside of the ninth inning, the eighth inning, and put the best guys in the situations where it was necessary, with the possible exception of Sung Wan-oh and Brett Cecil. But, you know, it's a work in progress. But I do think that having that piece, if Nicasio can be that guy at the end of games, it definitely gives this team a boost in their confidence in being able to finish games after the starters leave. I think there was, for a far too long of a stretch there, this feeling that as soon as the starter came out of the game, everyone just held their breath, hoping and praying that the bullpen could avoid disaster, and feeling like you had to have a 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 run lead when the bullpen came in before you felt like you were out of that danger zone. So it's interesting seeing Nicasio immediately step into such a significant role, but knowing that should that be the thing that rights the ship in the bullpen that carries the Cardinals into the postseason, they're going to have to figure it out without him once they get there. I mean, the timing and the circumstance of bringing him in and the significant role, it's going to be an interesting story to tell, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, you got to get there to win it. I mean, you can't win the World Series sitting on your couch in October. So, I mean, you push and then you kind of, yeah, you kind of figure it out when you go. And, you know, by that time you've got, you know, a starter that can go into the bullpen. You're not going to need 5 starters. Sure. I mean, there are different options, but you got to get there first. And hopefully they will. And this is also, you know, fairly a 3-week trial. I mean, Nicasio could easily re-sign, although, the second year of any reliever feels like pretty dangerous.
Bad idea.
Yeah, it's gonna, so I don't know if they want to go that route or not, but they could. I think that's going to be a very interesting thing. But, you know, hopefully they have that problem. It'd be a good problem to have right. If you can get to October and then have to figure out who's going to be your closer. Adam Wainwright could be your closer. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, he's done it before. So let's talk about Adam Wainwright as we transition to a little bit. I want to talk about a couple of beat up Cardinals, and the list is long, but, Adam Wainwright kind of sounds like he's getting closer. We don't have, you know, the firm timetable on Adam Wainwright, and it doesn't feel like anybody's made a big effort to get that timetable. You know, it's just kind of like, oh, Adam, what you doing? Oh, okay. Sounds good. It doesn't sound like anybody's saying we expect Adam Wainwright to be back by, you know, the end of the homestand or the end of the Cub series or whatever like that. We're not getting pronouncements like that. So I don't know what that means. Probably nothing. If he can come back in the next week or so, what's his role? I mean, where do they do with an Adam Wainwright that, in theory, I mean, he says his sinker is sinking now and all that other stuff, but it's Adam Wainwright, and you take it all with as much salt as you can get, I guess. I mean, what do we do with him?
You know, it's interesting. I'm sure we talked about this, but I know that I talked about it specifically on Birdseeds earlier in the year when he was struggling to get it together. And I talked then about the fact that I think there's still value to what Adam Wainwright can offer. I just don't know that it plays the best as a starter. And Adam Wainwright's always going to say he wants to be a starter. He's always going to say that he thinks he can do that because that's who he is. That's what he does. And I think that mentality has served him well over the course of his career. That said, this season, I think it's very difficult, and maybe why there hasn't been more of a rush to get Adam Wainwright back. It's very difficult to think about pushing certainly Weaver out of the rotation, but also Flaherty has done a much better job in his last start, and has shown a lot of potential there as well. So you're kind of in a situation then where you're dealing with, even before the Mike Leake trade, is there a Memphis starter that's going to be better or comparable to what Mike Leake would have been? I think you ask the same question about Adam Wainwright. And the answer in many respects comes from whether or not he really is at 100%, if his sinker really is sinking, if he has more than 87 miles an hour on his fastball. You know, those are the physical boxes that have to be checked, I think, before you can even consider putting him in the rotation instead of Flaherty. But I think that there may be a very valuable role for him to play in the bullpen, especially if you talk about making it to the postseason and then having to play without Nicasio. There's going to be there's going to be a hole to fill there as well. So I know that Adam Wainwright wants to be the guy that's the starter who goes out and gives you seven innings every start. But I think at some point he's going to have to maybe accept a little bit of a different reality than that, at least as far as this season is concerned. And I think that if he plays a role for this team going forward in 2017, I think the bullpen makes a lot of sense.
And what I did read from Adam Wainwright was he did not know what his position was going to be coming back. He has said, you know, whatever needs to be done this year. He did say, next year I'm going to start. You know, I plan on starting next year. Which is fair. I mean, especially with his contract, and if he's healthy, I think there's still, you know, there's still use and value there. And it may be a tag team thing with him and Alex Reyes, who knows. But anyway, but as for this year, you know, he's at least putting the bullpen on the thing, because I mean, he's been out for a little while. I mean, trying to build up the arm strength, and heavens knows he's pitched some short games anyway this year, so getting him to be able to pitch maybe one time through a lineup may be a little bit better than having him start. So we don't know. But somebody else that has been hurting, and apparently all year long, is Matt Carpenter. As you said, public enemy number one, at least for some people. You know, Carpenter comes out this week basically saying his shoulder has been bothering him. Sounds like pretty much all year long. He takes a cortisone shot, you know, takes a couple days off. I mean, he hit a home run this weekend, but it still feels like, I mean, you watch him play third base and the throws are not, they're not sharp. And I mean, I know he doesn't play third base very well, but he throws better than that on normal days. I still feel like I know he always takes pitches a lot, but it feels like he doesn't want to swing that much right now. You know, he walked once and struck out three times today, which seems like typical Carpenter type of thing. We talk about this a lot, but where's the responsibility lie? I mean, is the team supposed to figure it out that he's been hurt? Or is he supposed to go and tell somebody, look, you know, I know that, you know, at least give me a reason for the fact I'm hit 238. My shoulder's about to fall off.
I have very strong opinions about this.
That's why I asked the questions.
And so, I mean, we've talked about this with the medical staff before. And I am typically very cautious to sort of wade into someone else's territory as far as doing their job and doing it well. But I think I feel like there's a philosophy problem as far as the approach to these situations in St. Louis. Because from that interview where Matt Carpenter very cautiously admitted that this has been an ongoing problem, he said more than once that Mike Matheny knew about it. In one case, he said, I mean, everybody knows about my shoulder. Everybody knows that it's been a problem. So it seems that this is not some big secret that he just hasn't told anyone about all year. It seems as if it's an issue that has been ongoing, and relatively well known within the clubhouse, if nothing else. But there had been no scans, no tests. And that's the part that blows my mind, that, you know, if it's a situation where Matt Carpenter had been struggling all year and had just never told anyone, then I would feel like most of Twitter did in blaming Matt Carpenter for playing hurt when he's not able to produce at 100%. What bothers me is the idea that the entire team, or at least the powers that be, knew this was an issue to some extent, but rather than try to get out in front of it to figure out what was going on and how they could best deal with it, they, in effect, at least from the outside looking in, basically said, well, let's just see what happens. because that's always a great approach to impending medical issues. I mean, it only hurts when he swings or when he throws. So it's really not that big of a deal.
I mean, he never does that stuff. So it's okay.
No, it doesn't bother him at all when he's turning doubles into triples, but that's neither here nor there. But it seems to be a recurring trend where they wait so long to figure out what the problem is that at that point there's really nothing that can be done about it that's a quick or simple fix. Now, I know he got the cortisone shot. They seem to think that will get him through the rest of the season, but it just all seems very bizarre how they go about handling these sorts of circumstances time and time again.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, you're right. You think that if somebody's talking about it, they'd do something about it. You think that if somebody struggled this much all year long, for a guy that has a good track record, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not somebody that's come up and had a good year and then just falling off. It's not Alamedes Diaz, you know. Fine. This is a guy that's consistently good. And I know he's still walking, but again, like you said, he didn't have to swing the bat to walk. And half the time he didn't have to swing the bat to strike out. I mean, he's 1-3-2 no matter. I don't know. I just think that, yeah, it feels like there's something proactive should have been done with that. And it's not that the team has been so great all year long that he wants to ride that. It's not that the team's been in a race for that long that he feels like he's got to compete. They're kind of winning in spite of him at times. And I know he had the big home run this weekend. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, he still contributes. It just feels weird that, you know, kind of like Trevor Rosenthal last year. It was last year that he was hurt all year long, and then, you know, by the time they're trying to send him down to the minors, it's like, oh, by the way, I've been hurt. Did you knew that, right?
You saw that I couldn't throw my fastball like I normally do, right? Like, everyone saw that? I mean, no? Oh, okay, maybe not.
Are there things am I supposed to put this actually into words? Is that what you're saying?
Does this need to be expressed in, like, written form? Or is there some paperwork I need to fill out?
I kind of thought we had our understanding here.
I don't remember who it was. It might have been John Doble on Twitter. We were talking about this right after it happened. And I'm pretty sure it was him. But he basically said that if he was the owner of a team or the general manager of a team, he said, I'd be giving out MRIs like candy. Mm-hmm. Anytime anyone feels anything, let's get that checked out right now. And I don't know that I would expect a team to go to that extreme, but I would tend to lean towards that of the two options. You know, if you're paying these guys as much money as they are to do a job that they can only do if they're really healthy. So that seems like a fairly reasonable concept to me.
And yet they really don't. I mean, we talked about it at when we were Blogger Day again, and in some of the write-ups, we mentioned something about, I don't remember who even talked about it. I think it was Zach Gifford, because he was talking a lot about spin rates and things that I don't understand. he was asking about this kind of stuff, about Brett Cecil, because of course that was back when Brett Cecil really was bad off, not as bad as he has been. I mean, he's still not great, but not as bad as he was back then. And Mo says, you know, in the response of answering that question in different ways, he says, you know, you see that, and you know, assuming he's healthy, and he says he is, and there's not much else you can do about it, but trust the player. And, you know, at the time, you kind of like,
But there is, though.
Yeah, and then you start thinking a little bit more, and it's like, wait a minute. I mean, this is a society and a culture that says you need to be out there. You need to be helping the team. You need to fight through little nagging injuries, like your arm falling off.
Right. No big deal.
And so what do you expect them to say? And maybe there's more to it than that. Maybe you need a little bit more information. Maybe you've got to have some sort of, you know, solid evidence that says, hey, we're seeing this. You need to go get checked out. I don't know. I mean, I don't know but it does feel like there's a lot more of trusting the player to be fine. I mean, we've talked about that with Yadier Molina in the past of, hey, are you tired? No. Okay, play. Well, yeah. Like Yadier, he trains for 174. He's not ever going to tell you that he's tired. And he'll get you on Instagram if you do. But
right.
I don't know.
I think that at some level, that's and we even talked about this with Molina. Whether he plays 172 games a year or not, 174 games, whatever it is, 100. At some point, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If he plays every game all year or not, you want that mentality, I think. You want a guy to train to be out there every day. You want a guy to be competitive enough to want to be out there every day. Mm-hmm. But if you ask for that out of these players, then there has to be some level of responsibility on the part of the staff to be able to see through that, or to kind of make an executive decision at some point that the player is minimally involved in, that is at the best with the team's best interest in mind. And in many ways, again, if you want to talk about this game as a business, these are multi-million dollar assets. If I'm working with that much money going to someone who I am entrusting to create a certain kind of product for me on the field, I want to make sure that that person is as healthy as they can possibly be, and that they're in a position to maintain that, not to just sort of wait until they break down and then figure out where to go from there. So that's why I think there's a strange philosophy about how to approach these things. And, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe there's a lot more red tape involved that we're not aware of. Maybe that's a question that someone should ask, you know. How do you go about getting an MRI scheduled for a player? Just straight up, how does this happen? Like, is it a phone call, or is there a lot of paperwork that has to be handled, or what's the deal? Because it doesn't seem like it should be as complicated as it is.
Yeah, it's surprising. And I'm not saying that they don't, but it would be very surprising if they don't have an MRI machine on site.
Right.
You know, like, hey, guys, here's what we're going to do. What, you come in, you get dressed, you go through the MRI machine, and then you go out on the field. Okay? Maybe that's just the way this, you know, the new Cardinal way is to run through that. I don't know. By the way,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I checked. I think since Molina called out Matheny on Instagram, he's hitting .284 with 6 home runs, so maybe that's what more people
fair.
Need to do. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, all right.
point
proven. sorry to Carson Kelly, but you're never gonna play again.
Yeah, never. Never ever gonna happen. So
you've done a great job of warming the bench, though.
Yeah, he's learning. He's just soaking it up.
His dance moves on the airplane, though, are a little suspect, so maybe he can work on that while he's not playing baseball.
I didn't see that. I'm just now hearing about it, but Carson Kelly...
I don't know how you haven't seen it. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
I guess maybe I but Carson Kelly
but anyway.
Does not strike me, just looking at him and seeing him, as a guy that really can get down. You know, I could see that he could use a little
work. However, not to put anyone on blast, but Paul DeJong was worse.
Okay. Okay, that might be a little surprising.
I'm not sure he ever actually found the beach. I don't think that it happened. But, you know,
A
for
effort.
The man
goes to a different drummer, though. I mean, it just is the way it is.
That's true. That's fair. You know, actually, to each their own, right?
To be fair, I would have expected that more for Carlos Martinez, who
yes,
I think has his own
true.
Band going in his head. Just, it feels
just
like
constantly it music playing.
That's right. And and we love him for it. Don't
absolutely.
Again, let us not. Yeah. We're not criticizing Carlos Martinez. I just want to be upfront with this. Okay, we are not. Do not write us.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, I guess. Nobody ever does, so it's fine. But you know.
But not about that. Like, yeah. Just pick something else.
Yeah, pick something else.
Because that's not an issue.
Yeah, I mean, you know. Try to complain about the stuff we did say, not the stuff we didn't say. That's all
there's plenty. There's plenty to complain about there, I'm sure.
That's right. Okay. Well, we've done our 30 minutes or so. Hopefully you've enjoyed. Tara and I should be back next week. Tara has informed me that her jet-setting lifestyle is going to get her out of the house and across the country, but we are going to still try to effort a show, assuming Tara has hotel accommodations for that evening, and she's not on the side of the road somewhere trying
to find
Wi-Fi.
I may call you from, you know, the bus station or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Yes,
me and hotels, there's always some sort of story that comes from it, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Hopefully Tara will at least be able to lock her door this time, though.
Progress.
So
if you missed that,
yeah,
watch my birdseeds on the Marriott trip.
Absolutely.
It's all there.
And if you didn't miss that, go watch it anyway, because it was fun.
Right.
And
true.
I was in it, too, which is
yep.
not a reason to go watch it. But it's still something you should do.
Right.
So are you going to get a birdseeds out this week, do you think?
The list of things to do tomorrow before I leave on this trip is quite lengthy. However, if I don't get to do a normal edited version of Birdseeds, I may try to do a planned live stream at some point tomorrow. So,
or you could just do it in the airport and see if, you know, cowboy hat guy is back.
I could do that. It's always an adventure filming yourself in public, but we'll see. I don't quite know how things are going to shake out tomorrow yet, but I will do something, even if it's a scheduled live stream. So check the Twitter.
That's right.
I'm sure I'll let you know there.
There you go. That is what you should do. So if you're not following Twitter, Tara on Twitter. Oh, it's time to quit. Tara on Twitter. You probably aren't listening to the show, so it's okay. So hopefully we will see that. And hopefully we will be with you again next week talking about, I mean, the Cardinals have 3 with the Reds at home, which they got to take at least 2 out of 3 there. And then they have the 3-game series with the Cubs next weekend, which could be very, very interesting for all sorts of reasons. So hopefully we could be talking about the first place Cardinals next week.
I don't want to say that out loud, because every time we say that, they end up 6 games back.
Yeah, I mean, we're not likely to be talking about the first place Cardinals next
week.
Right,
there we go.
There's
a chance.
There is a chance. 2 games back, you know. And I don't know who the Cubs are playing this week in the middle, you know, before the Cardinals, but we'll hope for that team to win and the team that's playing the Brewers to win and the team that's playing the Rockies to win and the Cardinals to win.
It's not the Dodgers, so we should be good.
We got a chance. It's too bad it's not Cleveland, but,
right.
You know.
Right. Well, with our luck, that would be that would break the streak.
This is true. I mean, you got to figure that.
They'd get swept.
Yeah, that streak's, you know. Maybe going to get to 18 tonight, and that's just, I mean, you're getting back to those, what was it, 2002, the 20 games that the A's won in a row. I mean, that's just asking for trouble.
Crazy territory.
Ask
the Dodgers how it goes when you're really great for a really long time, and then you stop being great.
And yet, you know, they still have, like, what, an 8 or 9 game lead on their division? I mean, that just shows you how good they were.
Right.
And how good they're not anymore.
It's nice when you have that cushion to slump and still not lose any ground.
Yeah, I mean, you got to figure they're kind of, I mean, in some ways this is a good thing. Lose now, you know, and then, you know, probably bounce back, get you know, get back on that winning track and maybe go into the postseason with a head of steam. I mean, the Nationals have clinched today. So, in theory, they're going to be, I mean, I don't know how much, you know, you kind of juggle how much do you play your starters for how much rest do you get, blah, blah, blah. It's always that interesting argument we get this time of year of would you rather get to going in on a full head of steam or do you want rest or whatever. I think the Cardinals just want in.
However it comes, I think they'll be.
I'm pretty sure it's not going to be restful. So they're not going to be clinching anytime soon. So
no.
All right. Well, anyway, Tara and I should be with you next week. Until then, I am Daniel. That is Tara. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.